Good morning. Let me see. This is Sunday, March 15th, 2015, about 10:45 a.m. here in North Carolina. And we are continuing our study of certain chapters from the books taken from letters and talks by Joel Goldsmith, put into book form, edited by Lorraine Sinclair, and put into book form by Acropolis Books. We have three left, and that will complete this study. Today's are the 1979 letters, The Journey Back to the Father's House, and that's what we're going to study today. Next week, we'll be showing forth the presence of God, and then finally, the only freedom. And we will have completed a cross-section, a cross-study of almost all of the books in The Infinite Way. And hopefully you see by now the movement over the years of Christ to lift everyone that is receptive and ready from the letter to the spirit, from the metaphysics to the mysticism, and from the law to grace, from Moses to Christ. So let us just get right into this chapter. But before we start, have a period of quiet if you haven't already. Ask the Father within you to reveal itself. And we'll take a moment and do that. This is Chapter 9, The Spiritual Kingdom Made Tangible. And I guess most of us who come to the Infinite Way are interested in that. Just how do we practice the principles so that the presence of God will appear as form? We've talked a lot about this lately. How do we stop being an instrument, a vehicle for world mind, the belief in good and evil, the universal belief to continue to form itself? How do we stand aside from that and get to the place where we are a transparency instead of an instrument for world mind? The world mind is silent in us. We are a transparency, and we are a beholder bearing witness to God forming itself. How do we do that? Well, that's what this chapter is dedicated to explaining. So let us do our best to enter into this consciousness. And Joel starts with, as we grow more and more proficient in meditation, we will become more quiet inside, so that eventually we can hear the still small voice, which is the object of meditation. He uttered his voice, the earth melted. When God speaks, our problems dissolve. Our entire outer universe changes. The whole world becomes different after we have begun to receive impartations from within. So this one paragraph, and we didn't read all of it, but this one paragraph pretty much explains the entire goal of the Infinite Way. And it reminds me of that saying, the world is new when Christ has entered in. Entered in what? Entered in your consciousness. I used to look at it, and I've explained it that way in the first book that I wrote. what's the name of it? Steps to Mystical Experience. Somewhere in there, I explained that it reminded me of a kaleidoscope. Do you remember looking in a kaleidoscope when you were a child? I had one. I was fascinated with it. I turned it, and the whole picture changed. I turned it, and it changed again. I turned it, and the whole view that I was seeing completely changed. It was fabulous. I enjoyed it. And then when I entered the spiritual path and I began to practice principles, I had the same experience. When I made actual contact with that presence deep within, then the outer picture changed, and it was fascinating. It's still fascinating to me. So, then the question becomes, how do we make that inner contact? And that's the whole reason for Joel's existence here in this 20th century that just passed. That's the whole reason for his manifestation and his teaching. How to make that inner contact, and also that enough of us make that inner contact that there's a circle of Christhood. That was his vision, and I believe it's very real. Now, these four words really are very important. God must be realized. Yes, but what is realized? That became the object of my search for a while, because I came to see that knowing these things mentally is not the same as realization. There's an entire book called Realization of Oneness. But if you only have a mental agreement of oneness, it's not the same. You're not going to have the outer manifestation. You're just going to have something in the mind which refuses to manifest. And so, when you only have the mind, then you'll have good and evil. That's what will manifest. And you'll be still in... you will still be stuck in a universe of good and evil. But, or however, when you have realization, then it manifests. Then it takes form. So it becomes, or it behooves you to find out what really is realization. He says, the secret revealed in spiritual teaching is that God is not in the visible universe, except where God is realized. But nothing changed the slavery of the Hebrew people. God was nowhere visible in their experience. Yes, that's the whole point. Then comes Moses, and he says, Moses was able to bring to bear the actual presence of God, actually bringing God's presence to earth in human consciousness, and that's important. I remember reading Joel way back, probably 42 years ago, and I don't know why it stuck with me, but it did. I can remember reading his words that God requires a consciousness. That we need God, he said, but God needs us too. God requires a consciousness to manifest through. And so Moses was that consciousness. Without Moses making that contact, hearing this still small voice within, imparting to him, I am that I am, it would not have taken form through him as the great leader that he was. And the people would have stayed in slavery. Someone somewhere in your life, in your experience, must make this contact. Someone in your family, in your community, must make this contact. And why not you? So Joel says, there is always an interval when there is no God realized on earth. That's kind of bleak, isn't it? I suppose the Dark Ages may have been one of those periods. Think of that. No God anywhere realized on Earth. Billions of people and not one making this contact. Wow. I mean, just wow. He says, when the actual realized presence of God is brought into experience, however, evils disappear from individual experience. Now, that's important. They disappear from individual experience. You and your family can make that contact, and your consciousness will govern your family to a certain extent. In your individual experience, evils and goods will disappear, and you'll see God face to face. In your family's experience, some of their problems may lighten, and they won't know exactly why. It just seemed normal to them. But if they move away and move away from your consciousness and live on their own consciousness, then perhaps some evils can befall them again. They've come out from under that umbrella. Which is why when a child, I think it's up to 7 years old, they come under their parent, their mother's consciousness. And that's why Joel says, and in my own experience I know, that the child can be an ugly duckling and then get out from under that consciousness at seven. I'm talking about a human consciousness now, not Christ consciousness. Come out from under that consciousness and live in their own consciousness and all of a sudden blossom into the beautiful swan that they are. I see that a lot with the children that we work with. They're abused children. They're angry. They're furious. They feel out of control and frightened. And yet, we work with them. We work with the principles. We show them that, yes, what happened was not right. Yes, you have it's normal and natural here on Earth to feel violated and angry and helpless and fearful. But what you do with those emotions is what matters. You can become self-destructive, or you can hate society and strike out against it and become a criminal, but that's not the right way. The right way is to talk it over with someone, a therapist or a counselor. That's what we tell the children and encourage them to do. Work through this, agree that it was a lousy thing that happened, and then let it go. And then we teach them the principles of forgiveness, not for the other person, but for them, so they don't have to carry it anymore. And then we teach them the principles of pouring out love, and if you pour out love, that's what you get back. And then we teach them the principles that there really is a God, and wherever they are, God is. And if they'll remember God throughout the day, God will be near them. And then we teach them the principles that it's okay to stand on your own. You can make it. You're worthwhile. And then they go back home, or they go to another family, or they become independent because they're 18. And so that's what we do with the children. We teach them these principles. So, you can be the one in your family to practice these principles, and evils disappear from your individual experience and to a certain extent from your family members, if they're receptive. Remember the bus bench and the one person 1 foot away that is not receptive? So if they're not receptive, there's not much you can do. That's between them and God. You have to let them go. All right, so he says, in this particular century, we have been taught how to bring the presence of God into our experience. We have not been able to do it for whole nations, because nowhere on earth do we have a whole nation of people dedicated to God. If a spiritual leader should come along today, the people would most likely be against him. That's pretty powerful. He's saying if Christ appeared on earth today, the people would be against him. Why? because whatever people are seeking, they are seeking for it in material ways, not spiritual. Yes, so the people, I know so many people that do not want a spiritual answer. Give me my disability check from the government and my Medicaid so I can pay for my prescriptions. Give me my mood-altering, mood-elevating prescriptions and my check, and I don't need a spiritual answer. And it's a shame. But when you put a person, when a person becomes dependent on that check and dependent on those drugs, they no longer need, or maybe they never did, need a higher power, a God. And so they don't need a spiritual answer. They need a material way. And if Christ shows up and says, hey, there's a better way, they're not going to go to the meeting. Trust me. So he says, and this is in 1962, at this particular period, we are beginning to approach an era in which the spiritual might of a few, the 10 righteous men, can save a city. He says, I do not believe that there's going to be a violent outbreak of a widespread nature, for the simple reason that there is already enough of spiritual power loosed in the world so that the forces of evil can be held back. We are nearing that age. Probably before this century is over, spiritual might may be so recognized that it will be utilized in the affairs of men. Now, remember, last week we were reminded by Herb Fitch in his talk that Joel was instrumental, if not the one individual, then he was one of many individuals working at during his time to see through subliminal advertising, remember? And it was stopped in its tracks. Congress passed a bill, and I guess it's, is it Parliament in England that passed a bill? And it was outlawed and dropped. So that is definitely an example of spiritual might utilized in the affairs of men. And, of course, he says in several places he worked in cases of capital and management and labor affairs and strikes and that kind of thing. So, again, it was used in the affairs of men and women. So, what I'm saying here, the point that I'm making is in that day when he was here, visible, practicing these principles as a spiritual healer, traveling the world, giving these talks and lectures and writing these letters, there was, I think he estimated 65,000 people in the infinite way. And if he said, now we're going to work this week on subliminal advertising, you had quite a number of people, thousands and thousands of people working. And so the 10 righteous men that could save a city, as he said here, in 1962, there was already enough of a spiritual power loosed in the world so that the forces of evil could be held back. Now here we are, 53 years later, in 2015, and I do not believe that there are 65,000 people in the infinite way anymore. Then the reason why I do not believe that, I have no scientific data to back that up. It's just a feeling. And the feeling is that there are no longer people with the consciousness behind the infinite way, or there are no longer people with the infinite way consciousness. There are dozens and dozens, hundreds, probably thousands of people with the intellectual understanding, people who have read a few books, maybe even attended a class or two. Yes, there are people that listen to tapes everywhere, everywhere, in every major city. However, Even in some of those major cities, they're dropping away to just a handful. And the reason is there are no practitioners. There are no people, or very few, I should say, practitioners that are able to prove these principles. There are very few individuals on earth now that have the consciousness of the principles and can demonstrate God. A lot of people can talk it, but not a lot of people can practice it and prove it through demonstration. And so because of that, I do not believe that we have enough people to save the planet. That's just my feeling. I don't know how it'll turn out. But what I see concerns me. When I see an entire nation, I'm speaking of the United States now, when I see an entire nation that believes in entitlement, I'm speaking of the youth now, I see that they have an attitude of entitlement. The world owes me a living, and I shouldn't have to do anything for it. I should be able to collect a check. In my lifetime, I've seen a nation of hard-working people producing products slide into almost socialism, where it's a nation of people depending on the government to take care of them, or some program, some check. I know I'm probably grinding an axe, and I'm sorry, I apologize for it, but I see it, and it's, I'm going to be leaving here in 10 or 20 years, and the world that I'm leaving behind does not look too good. Now, there are several hundred of us listening to these talks every Sunday, and I hope putting these principles into practice so that we can elevate the overall consciousness. We can be the 10 righteous men and women that can save the city we're in. That's about the best we can do. We cannot save the nation if the nation will not turn to God. We cannot save the world if the world will not turn to God. But we can practice these principles so it shall not come nigh our dwelling place. All right, so he says, oh, and one other thing before I go on. I am well aware that on the one hand, I'm saying that God is omnipresent and the only presence everywhere. And now on the other hand, I'm speaking to you politically and saying, I don't like the state of the nation. Well, the reason why I'm doing that is because I do not live in the absolute 24/7. I touch the absolute in my meditation, but Joel says the infinite way is not an absolute teaching. So for me to stand here and watch the state of the nation and to pretend I don't see it would be a lie. On the other hand, to look at the state of the nation and say that that's all there is would also be a lie. There are what appears to be people struggling without a consciousness of God. And that's what this chapter is talking about. Someone must have the conscious awareness in your house, in your community. Let it be you. And in my house, in my community, it's myself and my wife and a few others. And we practice this meditation. We make this conscious contact every day. And then it governs our affairs, and hopefully the children that come to us learn the same thing. Okay? So, back we go. He says, we begin with the demonstration of God in our individual life, governing our individual health, supply, happiness, and relationships. This then spreads to those who are led to us. Until we individually can prove that the hearing of the voice is the dispelling of evil, however, we cannot expect our relatives, friends, and neighbors to believe it. Yes, you have to put it into practice. People have to be able to say, oh, look, it works. And so he says here on the next page, each one who is on the spiritual path must be dedicated to making actual contact with the presence of God within, to the end that harmony may appear in our outer world. So again, here it is again. You make the contact with the presence of God and harmony appears in the outer world. This is not a fantasy. It really, really works. Now, if we were living in the absolute, we would say, like those people in India that practice the principle the wrong way, according to Joel, we would say, well, it's all an illusion, so why bother? Only God is here. And we'd sit down on the side of the road and beg for alms and not do anything. That's the wrong way to see it. The right way to practice the principle is to say, okay, I'm experiencing this illusion. So, in my individual life, what can I practice to awaken me out of it in my life? And so I practice these principles. I make the conscious contact with the presence of God within, and then harmony appears out here in my world. I still turn on the news and I still see the problems in the nation or the world. But in my experience, they're not coming nigh my dwelling place. You see, I'm in the world but not of it. I've been removed to the secret place of the Most High. It doesn't mean I don't still see what the world needs. So he says here, God is the demonstration. We must never forget that there is no God that is ever going to do something, especially for us, or give us something, because God is the something. That's your koan, K-O-A-N, for the week. God is not going to do something or give you something, because God is the something. And yet God is not material. Isn't this strange? Very strange. You stand up and sit down at the same time. Our friend William Shakespeare says, to be or not to be, that is the question. And you have to learn to be and not be at the same time. You have to learn to see the reality of God omnipresent and also the appearance of unreality. So, in the long form, he says, there is no use in going to God for any material thing. The kingdom of God is not of this world. God knows nothing about food and clothing in the material realm. The kingdom of God is a spiritual kingdom, and when we go to God, we must go for that which God is, which is spirit, which is truth, life, love, peace, wholeness, completeness, perfection. We can go to God for the realization of God's grace and God's presence and God's law. We can go to God for the realization of the Christ. But all our going to God must be kept on the spiritual level, because God is a spirit, and they that worship him must worship him in spirit and in truth. So, it's a very strange thing, isn't it? You're walking in the world, but you're not of the world. You're seeing the problems, but they don't touch your experience. You are going to God, but not for anything. You're praying, but not for any result. Pretty odd, huh? My people are peculiar people, that is for sure. He says, the Master said, it is wrong to ask God for what we shall eat, drink, or wherewithal we shall be clothed. We are to forget those things. And there it is. No answer to that. We are to forget those things and seek the kingdom of God. Then the things will be added. So we go into meditation we are told not to meet a problem on the level of the problem. So we forget it. We go into meditation to meet it on the level of spirit, and then we open our eyes and the problem dissolves. So we're not to go to God to resolve the problem, and yet we're going to God to resolve the problem. Isn't this a strange way to walk? And here we come down to the nitty-gritty of what is bothering us, everyone. The reason we behold things materially is that at some period or other in our history, we accepted the universal belief in two powers. The Adamic belief in two powers. So, in other words, the reason we see the spiritual universe as matter, or as a material universe, or as a glass darkly, is because we accept the belief in two powers. If you could eliminate the belief in two powers in your consciousness, you would see God face to face, always and forever. Because none of us has done that on earth, we see through a glass darkly. In our higher periods in meditation, when we completely step out of that mind, we receive from the mind which was in Christ Jesus impartations from that consciousness that sees face to face. So he says, in some way or other, and nobody has ever explained how, the belief in two powers, good and evil, was accepted. Once we know this, we have the opportunity of reverting to the original truth, that is, clearing ourselves of this universal belief in two powers. Alright, so once we know what the problem is, we can do something about it. That's what he's saying. Now, everybody has to grapple with this, and I have people writing me and asking the question, how did this all begin? If God is everything, from whence then came this world mine? And of course, Joel gives us a hint when he says, the world mine is not an entity. It was a name given to a nothingness, just as was Satan and illusion and mortal mind and world mind and belief in two powers. They're all names given to something that's a nothingness, an impersonal nothingness. And you have to grapple with that. And I struggled with it. I heard people give me their explanations, and not one of them fit me. And I had to struggle with it for a lot of years. And I can share with you now what I came up with, or what was revealed to me within that satisfied the mind so it would stop asking that question. Because, you see, the mind is tricking you into staying on the level of mind. And so when it asks, where did this come from? Why is this here? Those are all questions that keep you in the mind. That's the mind asking that question. It's never going to be satisfied. It has more questions behind the questions, and other questions behind those, and still more questions. At a certain point, you have to come to the place where you say, that's the wrong question. That's not going to find me freedom. The question is not why or where did it come from. The real question is, what do I do to get free? Because that starts you into action, internal action. What do I have to do? That's the right question. That turns you to the path. And here are the principles, and here's what you do. But I had to ask, as we all do, I had to start with the mind to go beyond the mind. And I had to finally come to something that would satisfy it. Where did this come from? And so the answer that came was, and this is my answer, you don't have to use it, you can find one that fits better for you. But the one that works for me is, in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. And there, as a soul, I stood and turned to God and said, I want my own life. And God said, we are one. There is only one, and I am. And I said, but I want my own life. And I think I wore him down. He probably said, you know, there's only one way you can have your own life. You have to dream that you're separate from me. And I probably said, fine, let's do it. And so I, like Adam, I fell asleep. And I dreamed this entire separate human experience and said, I will give names to everything. And out of the desire to have my own separate existence, thank you very much, make my own decisions, I created this dream. But now, after these thousands of years and many lifetimes, I have decided I'm tired. That was fun, that was interesting, and now I don't want it. I want to return to my father's house. And like the prodigal son, as I turn and head back home, I am already beginning to feel the presence. It is said that the father fell upon his neck and kissed him. And I'm telling you, that is my experience. Before he was halfway home, and I am so far short of halfway home, the father came to meet him and fell on his neck and kissed him. And that's what the feeling is like for me in meditation. When I make that contact, it's just like the father holding me in his arms. And for that few moments, we are one again. And so I know I'm heading home, and I know I'm giving up the separate sense of existence, a personal sense of self, so that I may again hear those words, I am the one. And that solved it for me, where I could then start asking not why, but what do I do? All right, so the reason we behold a material universe is that at some period we accepted the belief in two. Once we know this, we have the opportunity of clearing ourselves of this universal belief in two powers. Do I accept the presence of evil in a person or in a condition? Then I am denying omnipresence. Because omnipresence means the all-presence of God. And if there is an all-presence of God, there can be no other presence. No evil presence, no negative presence, and no good presence. Do I believe that anyone on earth can tell God what I need? If I do, then I am denying omniscience, the all-wisdom of God, who knows our need before we ask. Yes. And I have a little experience to share about that this week. You know, we say that God knows our need before we ask. Yes, that's true. Because actually, the only thing we need is God. And God appears as our need. What does he say in this other page? God is the something that we need, yeah. And so now let me share this experience. When I am living this way, when I am making the contact several times a day, 12 to 30, only for a minute or two or three, but I'm making the contact, and some of those minutes or two or threes, I feel that movement within, that presence, that stirring. I receive an impartation. Then that has to manifest. Consciousness has to manifest, whatever level that consciousness is on. And so that harmony manifests without me even knowing that it's going to do that. It just appears in what seems to be a miraculous way. It's wonderful. I love to watch omniscience at work. And I had that experience this week. As you know, I make these talks every week, and I use a computer to do it, in a headset with a microphone and a monitor in which I edit. I look at these talks when I'm done, and I edit out any place where I cough too loud or some place where I perhaps ran on and on about something that wasn't needed. In one way or another, I edit it. and if nothing else, I turn up the volume because I know I talk too low. So, I need this monitor to move my mouse and highlight the sections I want to cut and paste and tidy up. That's what I do more than anything else, tidy it up and get it ready for you. Now, I need this computer to do it. I can't do it any other way. I mean, I'm not aware of any other way that I could do this. I suppose there are other equipment I could use, but this is what I've become accustomed to use. So, I need it. Or so it seems. Now, this week I had a lot of meditations, mostly for other people, but meditations in which I made contact. I could feel it. And I received a donation that was fairly large, as donations go. And I, of course, wrote the person and said, thank you very much for allowing God to use you for this love to flow. And I meant it. But I wasn't sure what it was for. Well, 2 days ago, I went to turn on my computer and the monitor was acting really weird. It was giving me signs and signals that it was about to fail permanently. And so, of course, I said, well, there it is. There it is. God knows my need before I ask. You see, it came before the need. And so I went down to, in my area, I went to a Best Buy and I found a monitor on sale and I bought it and I brought it home. And so the money appeared before the problem. It's fascinating to live this way. I love it. It's really fascinating to me. Omniscience and watching it work. So, God knows our need before we ask. Before they ask, I will answer. And that was the experience I had this week. And I have them all the time. And when they stop happening, I know I'm not making contact. And I've got to get back to it. And I can look over the week and go, oh yeah, I've been so busy out here in actions, I haven't had enough quiet time, so I better fix that. And so that's how I live. And I hope you do too. Now he says, are we strong enough to look through the appearance and acknowledge I can accept a God of omniscience, a God of all wisdom, all knowledge, a God of omnipotence, of all power, a God of omnipresence, all presence? If we can, we must credit everything else that we behold as an illusion, as some false sense that we are entertaining. That's pretty powerful there. I put a little star there and an arrow because, and I underlined it because he says, listen again. Now, this talk's going to run over. I'm sorry. He says, are we strong enough to look through the appearance and say, I can accept a God of omniscience, a God of omnipotence, a God of omnipresence? If we can, we must credit everything else that we behold as an illusion. And so there it is. Everything else you behold besides God is an illusion, including the youth of the nation that I was talking about. That's an illusion. The absolute reality is that God is the only presence. But God's not the only presence operating. And so when I turn my news on at night and I see these things, that's not God. And until someone recognizes God there, until several someones recognize God there, and there's 10 righteous men that can save that city, or that nation, or the world, until we have enough that can elevate consciousness, we will continue to see both good and evil. And so our job is to have these periods of quiet where we look through the illusion and behold omniscience, omnipotence, and omnipresence. So he says, for example, we may see railroad tracks coming together in the distance and say, let us get off this train. Our ignorance does not change the fact that the tracks do not come together. It is that we are not seeing them as they are. So, we see this universe through a glass darkly. We do not see God face to face. Yeah, we see a material universe, not a spiritual universe. He says, when we accept God as omniscience, God as omnipresence and omnipotence, we must agree that anything that we see of an evil nature can exist only as an illusory sense, like the mirage on the desert, in which we see a beautiful city where none is. There's no reason why we cannot begin, even in a small way, to perceive that if God is spirit, and if God is infinite, omnipresent, then anything that we behold that is not of that nature must exist only as a false sense, an illusory sense. And the result is, in us must be that we lose our fear of it. And this is the modus operandi of a spiritual healing treatment. Yes, so, if you're seeing good or you're seeing evil, that's an illusory sense of spirit. And if you're going to practice spiritual healing, then you have to, in your inner meditation, you have to see that it's only a false sense and release it. Let it go. No answer to this. Then, in the silence, you receive spiritual discernment reveals to you what's really there. And that's the modus operandi. That's the way you practice spiritual healing. Okay, he says, the healing consciousness recognizes the spiritual universe as the reality. He says, the person who undertakes healing work must have arrived at the consciousness and the awareness that God is spirit, that this is a spiritual universe, that God is omniscient, omnipresent, and omnipotent, and that every other appearance is an illusion. The practitioner then sits back calmly with no fear of the appearance regardless of its name or nature, because God is here where he is. God is there where the patient is, because God is omnipresent. Okay, so there's always two parts to knowing the truth. And Joel stresses it everywhere in the writings. One is the ability to, or one is the recognition, the inner deep realization that God is the only present. Spirit is here. This is a spiritual universe. And the second is that every other appearance is an illusion, an impersonal nothingness. He explains that in The Art of Spiritual Healing. But then there's the second part to your meditation, and that is you sit back calmly with no fear, regardless of its nature, because God is where you are, and God is where the problem is. God is omnipresent. And then when you sit back, well, he gives us an example here. He says, the all-power of God is here where I am. The all-power of God is where my patient is. All space is filled with the love of God. Then, this appearance, regardless of its name or nature, has no law of God to support it, no life to support it, no substance to support it. It is purely illusory in nature, you see? He's using the mind to step out of the mind. He's using the mind to contemplate this until he reaches that place where he's able to sit back with no fear. And then in that silence, he receives the spiritual presence of God, the awareness of the presence. The presence was there, but now in this silence, without the fear of the problem, he can receive that spiritual presence, a conscious awareness of it. And then that presence manifests. So he says, In this resting, because there is no fear of the appearance and no fighting and no trying to overcome it, it dissolves of its own nothingness. It's really great. It's really great to practice these principles and see them work. He says a spiritual healer must be an individual who has risen above the ordinary level of consciousness and attained some measure of the transcendental or Christ consciousness. That consciousness which is too pure to behold iniquity and does not see evil as something to battle. The person who would be a spiritual healer must first have prayed, read, studied, and meditated until some measure of that transcendental consciousness has come upon him, so that he can sit and look at evil in any form, whether it's sin, disease, death, lack, limitation, war. He can look at it without a trace of fear, and he's able to say, "No, thou couldst have no power over me at all, because only God power can operate in my experience. This is not a reality. This is not a person. This is not a condition. This is an illusory, substanceless, lawless appearance." As the practitioner sits in that perfect calm, healing must follow. So you see the method, the methodology here? You rehearse these things in your mind so that you can step out of that mind or rest back from that mind, or the mind can become silent. And then, when it is silent, in the silence of self, the mind which was in Christ Jesus, the real mind, makes itself known. As the practitioner sits in that perfect calm, healing must follow, more especially to the patient who is not looking to God to do something to a disease, but who is really beginning to understand that we look to God only for the presence and realization of God. All right? You get it? Okay, so he says, "We have put our finger on the entire trouble with the world, insofar as it relates to us individually. If we could remove the belief of the power of good and evil from our consciousness, there would be no power of evil to cause death. The moment the fear of death is overcome, a person has attained immortal life." So, how is death overcome? The final enemy? The final problem? Death, how is it overcome? How do you come into immortality? By the removal of the belief of the power of good and evil from your consciousness. He says, "We may not believe that we are fearing death, but that is only because we are ignorant of what is handling us. Why should we fear a disease if it does not lead to death? Why should we fear a little pain if it does not lead to death? Why should we fear anything on earth, a bullet, a bomb, or a dictator? Only one reason: it may lead to death. When we eliminate from our consciousness a fear of death, we have overcome the world." That's pretty heavy duty. It's not going to happen overnight, but it is the goal. You remember Christ Jesus standing and saying, "And now I have overcome the world. I am no longer in the world." That was before everyone viewed him up on a cross as if he were dying. He's already stepped out of the world. He's already living in immortality. He wasn't up there. And that's another cone to look at. And so, put as simply as possible, you have overcome the world when the fear of death is eliminated in you. And he says there is only one way in which the fear of death can be overcome, and that is in proportion to our vision that there are not two powers. There is the point, he says. We are a house divided against itself. We believe in good, but we believe much more in evil. Our fear is far greater than our confidence. All right, so it's easy to say, okay, I understand. There's no power in good or evil, and only God is here, but that's all intellectual. And your thoughts about this is not the same as realization. If you have an inner realization, it will manifest. Your immortal life will manifest. Your Christ self will manifest. And you'll say, hey, how neat is this? It was provided before I knew I needed it. He says, all human life is made up of two powers, but our thought has more faith in the evil than in the good. Why? We have judged from appearances, and we have seen more evil in our life than we have seen of good. We've seen more disease in the world than we've seen of health, and so on and so forth. Therefore, judging by appearances, our confidence in evil is far greater than our confidence in good. And he gives a lot of musts in this chapter. Musts. We must go beyond mind to spiritual discernment. And there it is. We must go from the letter to the spirit. The student on the spiritual path must go beyond the realm of the mind. Because if we are going to stay in the realm of the mind, we are going to believe in appearances, and therefore have more faith in evil than in good, and that will not help us. Our faith must be in the spiritual. We must be aware of spirit as the one and only. We cannot see spirit or believe that with the human mind. There must be a trace of the transcendental in us before we can see through the appearance and acknowledge, yes, I have been seeing through a glass darkly, because I have been seeing through my eyes, through the sense mind. Do we have spiritual discernment? Do we have the spiritual discernment to see through ugly appearances and see that actually these are only the product of a belief in two powers, good and evil? When we have transcended, this we see. I alone am power. I in the midst of thee am power. So we experience, he says, freedom through Christ. Freedom from what? Freedom from something out there? No. No illusion is ever externalized. We experience freedom from something within. Now again, you have to grapple with these things. Yes, I know, you can write me and say, wait a minute, how can you see that the United States is dropping into socialism when no illusion is ever externalized? Aren't you seeing an illusion? And I have to answer, yes. Yes. I am not seeing the Absolute all the time, 24/7. I touch the Absolute in my meditations, and sometimes I can behold it with eyes open. But I also see the state of the nation and the state of the world. But, wait a minute, only God is here. No illusion is externalized. Okay, that's true. But what if Moses sat in the desert and said, no illusion is externalized. These Hebrews aren't suffering. The heck with them. I'm just going to sit here and know God is. Well, then the Hebrews would never have been freed from Pharaoh, would they? What if Jesus had said, hey, no illusion is ever externalized. You don't have leprosy. Go away. Only God is here. Well, then nobody would have been healed. You see, we're living in two worlds, and I recognize that. Yes, I know only God is here. In my higher moments, I've seen only God is here. And yes, I know the state of the youth in this nation is not good. And unless they learn about these principles, it's not going to be good. Someone has to teach them. So I see both. And Joel saw both, and he tells you that in this chapter later on. He says, we must rise to the spiritual vision where we can believe that there is a divine presence in us that has come, that has been placed in us, that we might have life and have it more abundantly. This I that is within us is the Christ, the same Christ that walked the Hebrew lands as Jesus. Now that's pretty wonderful when you look at it. The I within me that I feel in my meditation is the same I that was Jesus. Wow. This Christ is in every individual since before time began. I am going to say that you can take a break here, because this is going to be a rather long talk. I didn't plan it that way. It's just coming out that way. So, let us take a moment, take a breath. Let us be still. If you need to take a break for a minute or two or five or ten and go do something and come back, you can do that. So I'll let it be silent here for a moment, and then we'll come back to part two of The Spiritual Kingdom Made Tangible. Okay, now let us continue with The Spiritual Kingdom Made Tangible. Now, why would you even care about the spiritual kingdom made tangible if God is all there is? It's because God is all there is, but it hasn't been demonstrated. And somebody has to rise in consciousness to make that demonstration. And since I see around me that I am not living in the kingdom here and now 24/7, well, then let it be me that makes this demonstration or begins to make the demonstration. So he says, what happens when we discover that the Christ is within our own being? We are made free. Once we have attained the realization of the Christ within us, we are free. Nobody can tell us that our salvation depends on how many prayers we utter, or on how many communions we do or do not have, or what church we go to, and so on. When mankind learns of its freedom in Christ, it is free. After that, no one can hold anyone in bondage. And really, that's the answer. If everyone on earth, if this youth that I speak of could learn that if they could place their reliance on Christ within, and have the actual experience of it, then it would begin to appear before they knew they had need of it, in ways they knew not of. They would not have to rely on some outer form. They would not have to be dependent on the government. You can take any group you want, even the terrorist groups. If they knew that they could rely on the Christ within, they would not have to fight for what they want, or even for what they need. Now, that doesn't mean that they wouldn't have to in some way work and put forth an effort and pour forth something in the universe, because that's part of living by Christ. Christ must express and must pour forth. And so there would be something that all of us would have to do to add to this universe, to pour forth the Christ. And so we would be involved in some work. However, it means that the dependence would not be on something out here. We would not have to fight to get it. Before we called, God would answer and appear as our need fulfilled. And what would that be like if there were not 10 righteous men in the city, but what if there were 100,000 in a city practicing this? Wow! What if there were 100 million on earth of the 4 or 5 billion practicing this? 100 million could save all of us. I'd like to see that, and someday I will. Now, he says, everything that is necessary to our unfoldment, to our progress, to our need in life is dependent not on man whose breath is in his nostrils. It is dependent only on our realization and recognition of the indwelling Christ, and our ability to receive its impartations from within, to hear the still small voice. All power, the power of healing, the power of forgiving, the power of supply, the power of harmony in human relationships, All power is in the recognition of this indwelling spirit that is in us. How simple it is when we begin to train ourselves. You have to train yourself. That's what this chapter is about. That's what this principle is about. That's what this infinite way is about. How simple it is when we begin to train ourselves not to look to God for anything, but to look within and realize there is neither good nor evil. There is only the presence of God, the presence of Spirit. Our whole life changes as soon as we adopt for ourselves the truth that there is neither good nor evil. There is only God. There is neither good health nor bad health. There is only Spirit. There is no such thing as youth in Spirit. There is no such thing as age in Spirit. There is only the eternality of Spirit, of life. We are not trying to change evil into good. Now, we've talked a lot about that. How in the human world and in the human mind, everything's about changing the evil picture into the good. And we're not trying to change evil into good. So if I sit down in a meditation about this state of the nation, I'm not trying to change it, the picture from evil to good. I'm trying to see through it during that meditation to the one omnipresence and feel its inner movement and then release it. Feel that drop off my shoulders and go on about my business and see what effect it has. In the beginning, it has an effect in my family, in my community, and perhaps not for the nation as a whole. But if there's enough of us, what then? So he says, we are not trying to change evil into good. We are not trying to change lack into abundance. We are trying to realize only the omnipresence of infinite spirit. It is not finding a God that is going to do something to the evil, because evil has no existence in any real sense. We develop, when we train ourselves, we develop the spiritual vision that can say, I cannot accept a God of spirit and evil or and good. Then we begin to see there is no more praying to God to do something. It is a matter of knowing the truth. There is neither good nor evil. There is only spirit. And not only mentally, no, there's a second part. After you know that there is neither good nor evil, there is only spirit with your mind, then you must rest back until that inner realization comes forth. So he says, we must recognize the truth that there's neither good nor evil, there is only spirit. There are only spiritual conditions. So he says, practice is necessary to see through the appearances. We must practice, we must train ourselves. Over and over, he says, we must recognize this, we must realize. This begins a training program. Because as we look out here, the appearances of evil are still there. The newspaper is full of them. Therefore, it's necessary to take a firm stand within ourselves and realize, now I have learned that I must no longer fear appearances, no longer desire to change appearances. Now I must sit back and rejoice. God, Spirit, is omnipresence, and there is nothing out here to be changed. If we are still seeking our good out here in the world, we are not ready for the spiritual kingdom of God, because my kingdom is not of this world. If we are looking to have our kingdom and our peace given to us by some change of circumstances out here, we are wrong spiritually. Humanly, it's perfectly all right. Spiritually, it's all wrong. Spiritually, we sit back listening for an impartation from within. Son, thou art ever with me, and all that I have is thine, all that I have. Then, when we open our eyes and still see evil appearances out here, we again turn within. I know now that in seeing those appearances, I am seeing through a glass darkly. If I would see face to face, I must turn within and recognize that the kingdom of God is a spiritual kingdom. Humanly, there is not much in the world that we are not fearing, and there is no way to overcome this fear but to accept God as spirit, omnipresence. We know that all evil exists only as appearance, as an illusory appearance, based on this universal belief in two powers. Well, then how shall I pray? How shall I treat? This whole lesson has been a prayer and a treatment, acknowledgement of the omnipresence of God. It has been an acknowledgement that there is no other power but that of God, or Spirit, and that is prayer. He that abideth in me, and I in him, the same bringeth forth much fruit. How can we abide there? Only consciously, only through our consciousness. We must know the truth that makes us free. Therefore, we must acknowledge the Spirit of God dwelleth in me. I live yet not I, but Christ liveth in me. Christ liveth my life. As we consciously dwell in the remembrance of these truths, we are abiding in the Word and letting the Word abide in us. Yes, if we rest and receive impartations from within, in the second part of our meditation. So he says, is there anything to fear when we begin to perceive that Christ lives in one another? Who can love his neighbor, that is, the whole world of men and women, unless it is through loving the Christ in them? We cannot love their human qualities. There's only one way we can love them as ourselves, and that is to remember the Christ in them and love that Christ. Love the Christ in them. Eventually, this is the way we are going to bring peace to the world. We must stop seeing men and women. Well, that's pretty plain, isn't it? Christ comes into manifestation only as we perceive it. And I can tell you from personal experience that when just in the members of my family, I'm able to look through what I think I know about them humanly, and in my meditation see their true identity as Christ, and really behold it, not with the mind, but with spiritual discernment, then that demonstrates itself. And suddenly they become more friendly, or more intelligent, or more loving, or more of the Christ showing forth. Or they're healed. Suddenly they have a healing. One way or another, as I know the truth sets them free. He says we really make our own life. The world does not make it for us. We, those of us on the spiritual path, make our own life experience. We have the knowledge given to us of how to do this. And so the next question is whether or not we are going to use that knowledge. If we abide in the truth, we bear fruit richly. If we do not abide in the truth, we are cast forth as a branch and withered. We can watch how we begin to make our own life when we stop fearing appearances, go back within and realize all power is within me, and that Christ within me. All right, again and again, he's telling us in this chapter that we must make a beginning in our own consciousness, which then reflects in our own family and perhaps in our own community. And from there, we can reach the place, as Joel did, where we can practice these principles with the nation or with the world, as he did with the subliminal advertising, and as we can do with, and as I can do with the youth of the nation that's depending on the government instead of finding the Christ. All right, so this consciousness is not merely a blessing to us, but a blessing to all those who come within range of our consciousness. All those we embrace in our thought receive the benefit of this truth, which we have received in our consciousness. The more we keep this truth in our consciousness, the greater blessing we are to all. And finally, the last page, This consciousness that we develop does not stay within us for our benefit. It flows out. That is one of the joys of the spirit. The moment we begin to develop some measure of this consciousness, it begins to flow out. For this reason, a spiritual student has a great responsibility. Whatever is taking place in his consciousness is what is governing his household. Okay, now, again, if we only practiced the Absolute, we would say, well, only God is here, and so I'm going to rest in that, period. And there would be no need for, as he says here, the consciousness flows out. There would be no need for it to flow out. Why? Why flow out and bless anybody? There's nobody there. You see, we're not living in that state of Absolute. We touch it in our moments of communion. Yes, I will agree, I've experienced it. Where I disappear, the person disappears, and only God is here. Yes, I have reached that height in consciousness, in meditation, in silence. But most of the time when my eyes are open, I'm still walking around in this world. Joe calls it living between two worlds. And that's the experience. I see them both. And I become silent, and I bear witness to God as it flows forth and blesses the immediate family, and then later perhaps the community, and perhaps to a real small extent the nation and the world. Okay? So I don't know about you, but I'm still walking between the two worlds. Now, when the kingdom becomes my permanent dwelling place, I suppose that I will disappear. Now, finally he says, our consciousness is either full of truth, full of the substance and presence of God, which is flowing out from us, or our consciousness is empty. No one of us who maintains truth in our consciousness can ever be anything but a blessing to everyone who knows us. That is why the Master could say, my peace I give unto you. Whatever of peace and power we have, we are giving to and leaving with those who become part of our experience. Now, it's a very strange thing, this spiritual path, because, well, we are standing up and sitting down at the same time. Don used to say to me, my first spiritual guide, Don, who gave me the first copy I ever had of The Art of Meditation and introduced me to the Infinite Way, he used to say, you have to learn how to stand up and sit down at the same time. But Shakespeare knew it when he said to be or not to be. You see, it's the same thing. For now, we see through a glass darkly, but later face to face. So yes, I am well aware of the problems that face not only the nation but the world. But I am also aware of behind all this is that one invisible, spiritual, eternal, immortal presence. And so the answers are not to try to change something or someone. The answers are to know the truth and to teach others to know the truth, so that when enough of us know the truth, then the entire world will be free in Christ. And so I hope you join me in this, on this spiritual path and with these spiritual principles. And I hope you join me in meditation and touch that Absolute. And I hope you join me in this wonderful walk where you see miracles happen, where you can see that God knows your needs before you do. And I hope you join me in this wonderful feeling of the presence which I'm feeling at this very moment. And I hope you join me in seeing in your immediate family that when you make this contact, harmony manifests, demonstrates, forms itself, And I hope you join me in the evening meditations that I have sometimes, in which I release Christ into the world for no other reason than to just release the Christ. And if enough of us do that, perhaps that there will be an internal awakening, and those looking to the government and those looking to other nations and thinking that they have to fight and struggle and take to supply their needs will awaken to this inner presence, and we shall see the kingdom of heaven on earth as it is in heaven. The circle of Christhood, to which Joel so beautifully envisioned. Thank you for your time, for letting me into your consciousness, and may God bless you with the conscious awareness of its presence daily. Thank you.